You took a month off. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm very tired, but
yeah, that tends to happen.
Good. Good overall.
Yeah.
We escaped the health scares unscathed. Well, mostly. Paul's certainly scathed from his procedure, but other than that.
but not with bad news at the end of it.
Not with bad news. Yes, exactly.
That's all good news.
So yay. It's all good news. It is all good news. Yes. So yeah, so still working our butts off, talking to you through a new device, which is great.
Yay! So we have aside from the health scares, we have some stuff to catch up on, writing wise yeah. and stuff like that. Since last we talked, I went to AWP.
That's right, you did. Oh, we need to hear your rundown of AWP.
Right.
We totally do.
So, first of all, AWP 25 is in mm-hmm. Los Angeles.
Oh, fancy.
Are you an AWP member?
I'm not.
I would consider it. It's a save on the registration. And if you were up for it, registration usually opens in September, October, somewhere around in there.
Oh,
and
okay.
then the conference will be in like February or March of 25.
Okay.
And if you wanted
to think about that,
if you wanted to go, we could split a hotel room and save money.
Yeah, we could do that. Yeah. Let me think about that. God, it's so weird. I have no idea what life is going to be like next year around
right?
this time. What the?
Well, you know, I've been trying to get to AWP for I don't know how long and finally was able to do it because it was in Kansas City. I knew I had a reliable car.
Yep.
And of course, when I registered for it, I think I had just been notified that my student loans had been wiped out.
Oh, like just then.
Or a little, you know, maybe a little bit before. So it was like, I have the vacation time I can use. I have the extra money. Mm-hmm. And it's real close by. Do it.
Yeah, real close by for you.
It was great fun. I was probably a little overwhelmed, never having been to one before.
Sure. Yeah. What were the highlights?
Well, the book fair was probably the big highlight.
Mm-hmm. Did you come home with an extra suitcase full of an entire library?
Yeah. Yep. And I'll share them all with you here in a moment.
Okay. Excellent.
And tell you all the stories about it. Now, of course, there were a lot of great, you know, panels, way too many to get to all the ones that I wanted to, because a lot of them were scheduled at roughly the same time. So I had to pick and choose.
Yeah.
And yeah, some of them I was a little disappointed with, but there were still a few that I thought, okay, that's useful. There aren't any specific, like, panel discussion highlights, really.
Okay. All right.
Because like I said, I was looking for panel discussions that had to do with like building a community and things like that and trying to, you know, find inspiration for what I feel like I'm doing here and ideas.
Comic cons are always like that too. It's like, oh, so many things that I'm interested in.
You know, honestly, I think a lot of the people that they had for those types of panels, because they are on the East Coast, even if it's in sort of Appalachia and stuff like this, they're close to the major literary metro areas, you know, New York and Boston and stuff like this, right? There's a slightly, and because even the people that were on this one panel, they were in Asheville, North Carolina, which has a great literary tradition and a good university, right?
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah. I wasn't thinking about that, but you're right. It's like really weird to think about. Like Alabama has a great Shakespeare festival and a great master's program that specializes in acting Shakespeare. It's like, wait, what?
Right. And states like Mississippi and Alabama, they have individual writer grants that are, you know, several thousand dollars. Do you know what Kansas has? Nothing. No individual writer grants at all.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah, so I listened to a lot of their advice on how to get stuff started in a community and how to do whatever and gets interested in it. And some of it was helpful, but some of it I think was and even though I tried to explain it to them, they just did not grasp some of the problems that I see here and have run up against time and time and time again.
Right. Yeah.
Trying to do something.
It's the interest problem and the tight-knit other groups problem, the conservativeness problem.
And a lot of their stuff was, well, you need to start small. And I go, yeah, the problem with starting small is that people think you just do that one thing. And if you try to do something else, they don't follow. You have to kind of start big.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. And, yeah.
And not only do you have to kind of start big, you have to have somebody in there who has the ability or the drive to essentially kill themselves in the process of doing it.
What do you mean? You mean like all the promotion and the...
Right. So the Tallgrass Film Festival. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the name of the man who started it. And I'd have to go back and double check the facts. But I have this in my head that, you know, the festival's only been around for 20 years, and he was only the head of the festival and getting it started and the founder of the whole thing for like the first 6 or 7.
And it still sounds like a long time to me.
Right. But and he would still be doing it if he hadn't like collapsed and died of a heart attack on the sidewalk somewhere in town, if I remember the story right. I probably remember it wrong.
Oh my God.
But that's the thing. It's like, you know, all that. And that was, you know, he had a job that he worked, but every other waking moment was him just going out, you know, hitting the streets and begging people for money to support this thing, getting, to the point where, you know, like I said, he collapsed and died unexpectedly. I mean, I don't even think he was out of his 40s yet. Or maybe I've got his rage. Maybe I just got the whole thing wrong. But maybe that's a mythos thing I've just picked up from somewhere in my brain. I could be completely wrong about it. Probably will have some weird Wichita listener will suddenly email me and go, you know, you got that wrong all the way around. Because my imagination does run away with me. But yeah, that's kind of the story that's in my head around Tallgrass. And I could, like I said, might be wrong.
Well, it's the same kind of thing with like doing live theater and stuff. You're not really like, someone asked me the other day, like, how much work do I put into Blue Dime Cabaret, which obviously I don't get paid for. I get paid like an equal portion of box office and tips, just like everybody else.
Right.
So it's like 20 bucks per 20 to 60 bucks per show. Yeah. I don't know. I had to think about it when someone asked me how much time do you put into it? And I don't know. I do all the casting. I do lots of the promotion, not all of it. Obviously the venue does too, but
right.
But like, and I'm talking to press a lot the next couple of weeks because it's our anniversary show and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I probably spend probably between 20 and 30 hours a week, I imagine, working on Blue Dime. I probably do. Yeah. It's, and you know, that's a part-time job that I'm not getting paid for. So yeah, I understand that. It's like, yeah, well, it's, yeah.
But you know, that's just a little troop.
Well, kind of. It's not a troupe. I cast it fresh throughout from everyone in Denver each time. So like it is actually Denver wide.
But you're able to get people engaged, people involved, all this other stuff like this. I have such a hard time getting people engaged, maybe because I am a shit.
We just need to get you into a theater class, just one.
Right. But the thing is, because I'm aware of my particular weaknesses, I know that I need people around me to do things that I'm not good at. But I can't get anybody to, you know, interested in that type of stuff. So the only other option I have is to like win the lottery and then just pay people to do the stuff. Because then
right.
It's like, I know you don't feel like doing it, but if I paid you, a salary.
Is there a grant you can get that's not Kansas? That's like a national thing, or
But in order to do that, I would have to have the organization.
Oh, I see. Yeah, right.
I'd have to already be an established 501(c)(3) to, you know, qualify for the kind of grant that would be able to pay for a staff. And then in that, I would have to have,
right.
So I have, there's a whole process to get all that built up, and I can't find people to help me with that. Probably because I have my own little reputation around here being a shit sometimes.
So anyway, you just have like three ghosts visit you on Christmas Eve.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the truth is it's not going to get any better in the next few months. Whole other story. We can get to it another time, maybe later if we have time, because you wanted to ramble and I'm hogging the stage here. But anyway.
Oh, no, it's fine. I wanted to hear about the con.
So most of my positive stuff happened by going to the book fair and then hanging out with Duncan Barlow. You remember Duncan?
Oh, yeah. I totally remember Duncan. Yay.
And of course, you know, met a bunch of his students from South Dakota.
Awesome.
Picked up a bunch of books by writers that he's been publishing with Astrophil Press. And then I met James Reich, who runs Stalking Horse Press. And then I met Kurt Baumeister, who is one of the fiction editors for 713 Press.
Awesome.
And then a bunch of other writers that they all know and do stuff with. And most of the fun stuff happened to me going to the events, the after events, the parties and readings and stuff like that.
Networking.
Oh, yeah. Well, not even really networking, just hanging out with other people.
Yeah.
So the first night of the conference, I went to the rock and roll reading that was hosted by Kansas State University, my alma mater, and Dan Hoyt.
Awesome.
And, you know, had a nice conversation with Dan after the reading. You know, learned about a few people. I've got it written down somewhere, and I haven't picked up the book yet, but I got a stack of books over here.
Nice.
That was the first night. It got out at 8:00. And I had 1 hour left of the Authors Guild meetup.
Ah, okay, cool.
And I almost didn't go to that, which would have been a huge, huge mistake.
Why did you almost not go?
Well, because I was talking to Dan after the K-State thing that got out at 8:00 and knew I had walk. And I was like, maybe I just go back to the hotel. Nah, it's just right over there. Okay, fine, I'll go. It's just walk in, see what's going on.
Cool.
Walked in to the Authors Guild meetup. They had, you know, an hour left to go before they were packing up and packing out. And I met a representative from the guild, Johnny. I can't remember his last name off the top of my head right now. But I've linked up with him on LinkedIn and plan on keeping in touch with him because I've got some questions and things. And they need to, the closest group or Authors Guild branch is in Chicago. There's not one in Denver, but there's in Chicago.
That's surprising.
There's not one in Dallas.
Huh.
You know, and I know there are a few Authors Guild members here in Kansas, but there's nobody organizing stuff or doing things associated with the guild for all of us guild members that are here that can't always get to Chicago for stuff.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to Johnny about
it. I'm surprised it's not in Denver at all. That's interesting.
But I'd like to talk with Johnny about maybe getting something, you know, not necessarily official, but at least something that, you know, might allow me to be involved with stuff with the guild.
Yeah, get like a sort of a chapter-ish thing going.
Plus, I also want to understand the whole voting thing for the officers when nobody ever runs against anybody. It's just like, here's a bunch of things and you can either vote yes or not vote. And I don't understand the purpose of that.
Oh, okay.
Even though I've been a guild member since 2008, right? I don't understand that type of voting. Anyway.
No, I don't either. Sounds kind of Russian.
Also, the other person I met at that guild meetup was our new friend, Crystal, that you talked to about her memoir.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Yes. And if I had not gone to that meetup, I would not have met her. And that would have been the biggest mistake of that entire conference.
Exactly right.
She is delightful, has a wonderful story to tell with that memoir. And
it sounds
like she has tremendous luck for that. And I hope you guys had a good conversation.
We did. Yeah, she seems super cool.
But I also got her introduced to Duncan and the Stalking Horse guys and the 713 guys.
Nice.
And got her introduced to Erica Wirth, whose new novel White Horse is getting all sorts of good press.
Oh yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And Duncan published her short story collection, Buckskin Cocaine, which was kind of got her, was the at least as far as publicity goes, the big breakthrough thing that got everybody like,
yeah,
who
I
is
think,
this? And I think
you were telling me about that one.
Yeah. No, that's a fucking wonderful collection. If you ever get a chance to read it, Buckskin Cocaine by Erica T. Wirth.
Right. Yes.
I have not read White Horse yet. Sorry, Erica. It got a good review in the New York Times. I'm just not much of a horror reader.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. You don't do genre most of the time, right?
Mm-hmm. But I do in if general. It's good, and I trust that it's good because I've read her other stuff.
Oh, it's just,
I'm like, okay, horror. I have to get over my that particular genre prejudice because I don't know.
Well, today's Tolkien Reading Day, National Tolkien Reading Day, or is it International Tolkien Reading Day? I don't know. Might just be national.
So let's see here. I met a writer, Tobias Carroll, that Duncan published, his book, Ex-Members. I picked that up. He did a reading from it. It was very interesting. I have not had a chance to read it yet, but Tobias Carroll.
Did you have any like potential takers when you met all those reps from the small presses, do you think? Would they publish stuff that is the kind of thing that you write?
Yes, a lot of them do. And I have sent off a few things to a few places, yes.
Great. Okay, go on. Just was wondering about that.
Another Astrophil book, Christian Tibordo. I picked this up. I think I met the writer at the Astrophil table briefly.
Cool.
Got this one signed, Leopold's Labyrinth. It's another Astrophil book. This one's by Mike Carraro, and got to hear him read this at one of the readings. It's very interesting. Very different, very oddly structured, and for just flipping through it, it reminds me of my first year, our first summer at Naropa when, what's her name?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that everyone had a crush on. Everyone had a crush on her, literally.
No, I don't know that everyone had a crush on her.
Oh, okay.
She came and did reading. She was teaching there. She was a classmate of Will Christopher Bear's. I can't remember her name at the moment.
Did I take her class? I thought I took her class.
Maybe.
Anyway.
Anyway, she got up and was reading something from her novel, which was very experimental avant-garde, and that was the novel that made me go, do I belong here?
Oh, yeah, right. I can't think of her name. It was a long time ago, listeners, okay?
Yeah, 20-some-odd years ago.
Of alcohol drunk between then and now.
And, of course, then I ended up getting into an argument with her at some point about...
Of course you did.
Right, about art for art's sake.
Yep.
And
that sounds like tracks.
Right. That was.
Naropa.
Yeah. Well, I established that I belonged right away.
Right away.
And then also another Astrophil book. None of This Is an Invitation by Jessica Alexander and Katie Jean Schinkel. It's a.
Oh, cool.
Kind of a ghost story.
Oh, neat.
I picked up a lot of Astrophil books because I was just hanging out at Duncan's table, basically.
Well, yeah, just like buy them all out, man. Alumni stick together.
Yeah, I got this book, Swerve, by three different writers, Vincent James, Roland Safey, and McCormick Templeman. And I met McCormick Templeman. She's fun.
Oh, cool.
Picked up this book by Matthew Binder called Pure Cosmos Club. This is a Stalking Horse book.
Oh, okay, cool. Are these all novels?
Yes.
Just in various sort of postmodern styles. Cool.
Another Stalking Horse book I picked up was City Moon by David Ohl.
Mm-hmm. These all look really interesting.
Yeah. Now let's see. Oh, let's go with the rest of the, Kurt Baumeister from Stalking Horse. I picked up two of his books, Pax Americana. Now, Kurt works for 713, but has had his books published by Stalking Horse.
Okay.
And then Twilight of the Gods.
Oh, so we're all cross-pollinating then. That's cool.
No, these are all... in fact, James Reich is a Naropa alumni, but he was in the psychology department.
Right, okay.
Here's a 713 book, Kansastan, by Farouk Ahmed. And he actually, turns out, he immigrated and grew up in Kansas. And this is kind of a post-apocalyptic, you know, Kansas thing. It should have fucking been considered for the 2020 Kansas Notable Book List, but nobody got it on the list. Nobody read it. It was never talked about.
Oh, man. So we can't put it on a new list because it's...
And that gets to the thing that will probably get me pissed off with a lot of... Get okay. other people pissed off with me because I have a problem.
Okay.
And then I picked up Jiminy Wahaji, her book, The Children of This Madness. I probably pronounced her name all sorts of slaughtered wrong. I'm sorry.
I can't even read it from here, so I'm sure you're fine.
It's Gemini or Jiminy. I just don't... I heard it pronounced both ways.
Oh, okay.
And never heard her pronounce it.
Well, that doesn't help.
Some of these I had to order through Watermark when I got back because they were out of stock. But I knew that I'd met the writers. And then James Reich, who runs Stalking Horse Press, and his book, The Moth for the Star, was published by 713.
That's cool.
And then I was just sitting at a table, and this writer was walking by putting postcards on tables for her novel that was coming out later in February or the beginning of March. And we talked. She's from Texas and had traveled through Wichita and visited Watermark. So I put in an order for it. Amanda Churchill, The Turtle House. This one, of course, is by Harper. So, I'd give her book a shot because she was nice and pushing the thing. And thought I'd help her out. And it looks good, though. It looks like a really good story.
Great. Oh my gosh. This is exciting.
Yeah, those are all the things I picked up while I was at the thing.
So you've already sent some of your stuff out to some of these presses, or are you still concocting
one or two. I don't remember. Yeah. Oh, and then of course I stopped by the Grey Wolf booth and picked up The Art of the Poetic Line from their Art of series. I have a whole bunch of the Art of series, but I picked up their book on The Art of the Poetic Line.
Cool. Another crafty book, huh?
I also picked up a couple of Percival Everett books from... I forgot one. Hold on a second.
This is a treasure trove you come back with.
No, so also at the Grey Wolf booth, I picked up Percival Everett's Erasure, which was just made into the movie American Fiction, which if you haven't seen it, please go see it. And also picked up Everett's Dr. No.
Dr. No?
Dr. No.
Is that like a reboot?
No. So the latest novel from the always brilliant Percival Everett is about a black professor who studies the concept of nothing and is recruited by a wannabe James Bond villain to rob Fort Knox, which contains not gold, but nothing. So it's kind of a riff on Bond in a way.
How cool. That sounds really interesting.
And then I picked up a collection of poetry by W. Todd Kaneko, also from Black Lawrence Press. And he and I had a nice conversation about having a black title page where you have to go out and buy special silver markers so that you can sign all of your fucking books.
You can have a silver Sharpies on you at all times.
Right.
Pretty cool, though.
Yeah, pretty cool. So that was
That's how I like to read my Kindle.
That was what I got all picked up at the book fair. And there were other...
That sounds awesome.
And there's some other writers that I met and talked to and didn't get their books, but I've got them on my radar to watch out for.
Cool.
Yeah. And I could go on talking about books. While I was there, I finished Kieran Goddard's I See Buildings Fall Like Lightning, which I got...
Oh, yes.
very good. His first book, Hourglass, his first novel, Hourglass, is fabulous.
Yeah, you were. I think we were talking about that last time, right?
Been reading Zori by Laird Hunt. Trying to read Shy by Max Porter. Cool. And I say that, I don't mean that I'm having a hard time. I mean that I'm involved with Zori and I'm also trying to get through the Kansas Notables list stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So
that sounds like you have some issues with
Kansas Notables.
With those. Yeah. Yeah.
Michael Ondaatje has his first collection of poetry out since Handwriting.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
So A Year of Last Things. Yeah.
Fucking cool. Excited. Your favorite.
And then I've been listening to music podcasts, particularly the one Bandsplain. And someone brought up this book, so I figured I'd better fucking read it. And it's Girls to the Front, the cool. True Story of the Riot Girl Revolution.
Oh, fun. That sounds cool. That sounds like a good...
But mostly cool follows, thing. You know, the arc of Bikini Kill.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I encountered this author, and she's now my online best friend. Well, maybe not, but but we are in conversation. So there's this memoir, If You Can't Take the Heat, by Geraldine de Ruyter. So you've heard of her, probably, right?
I've seen that around, I think.
She's the writer that won the James Beard Award for doing the article where she made the cinnamon rolls recipe that Mario Batali published when he published his apology for sexual harassment. She did this like response essay where she wrote this entire article. And then she's like, I'm going to make the fucking cinnamon rolls. And she made them. She wrote this amazing article. And she won all kinds of awards for that. Of course, she also won like all of the pissed off man babies on the internet coming after her and stuff. But
oh, God, fucking pissed.
So this is her.
Fucking so is man her, babies, her, man.
Some man babies everywhere. This is her new book. It just came out just like the other day. And right before it came out, there was this really very unfairly negative review written about it.
Oh, yeah.
In the New Yorker. And it had a really poisonous kind of violent like image they had created for the review and stuff too.
Was it written by a man?
No, actually it wasn't. Surprisingly, it was a misogynist tearing down of this book, but it was written by a woman. I think that's why they thought they could get away. I don't know what it was. Anyway, she's just like, whoa, this is personal, you guys. She's like, I don't even know what to do about this. So of course, what do we all do on Threads and online? We're like, oh, I'm buying this immediately. Are you kidding
right.
me? Oh,
right.
Are you kidding? So like ever since she was like, I feel, is it just me? And everyone's like, no, this is not just you. This is terrible. This is a very, very bad piece of journalism. This is awful. How could they do this? So all of us went out and we bought it. And so she's now like on so many best-selling lists with this memoir. It's like, it's so great. Just because she was like, ouch, is it me? And everyone's like, oh, I'm buying it. Oh, buying it. So now she's a bestseller. She's like, I guess I'm glad for the negative review. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't be. But so I just posted, just like everyone was posting her posts. It's like, oh, I'm buying it immediately. I'm running a memoir myself and I'm trying to sell my memoir myself. And so I'm always on the lookout for other really cool, sassy, smart women doing cool memoirs. And she's like, oh my God, Jen, go ahead and message me if you have any like questions about it. So like now I'm sort of in conversation with her. Her book just came out. So I'm not going to like push myself on her too much right now, but we are in conversation. So, and I started reading it and she's like another me. She interrupts herself in her writing in parentheses all the time, like I do.
Right.
She has this same kind of like snarky voice, but that's also really honest. She centers her memoir around food and food memories and that kind of thing. So, but it's really good so far. I'm really enjoying it. I think I read her cinnamon roll article back in the day, but I don't remember having read her stuff like recently. So I've just started it and it's phenomenal. And I'm like, be my best friend. help me celebrate your memoir and also help me sell mine. So yeah, so that's been great.
That is exactly why when I started talking to Crystal and she talked about having a memoir, I thought I need to have her talk to Jen.
Right. It's not like I'm published or anything.
Well, no, but I don't know anything about writing or trying to sell a memoir.
Yes. Yeah. They do require different things. It's true. Yeah. The asks are very different. It's so weird. The requirements that they want from you, it's like, it's bizarre.
And I knew that you had worked with, what was his name? The guy that you sent me the book
for? Childress.
Herb Childress. Who's had memoirs published and done all this stuff like that. So you've worked with people that know what they're doing. So you, even though you haven't been published yet, you know what you're doing.
I believe I do. I think I do.
You know, that I guess I've never quite forgotten a lot of the, I've never quite forgotten anything that Bobby taught me.
Yeah.
And just like with Bataan, when you took Tai Chi with him and Bobby, they both had that philosophy that there are no secrets, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
If you have knowledge and someone needs it, just fucking share it. You gain nothing by hoarding it.
That's exactly right.
Or if you know someone who knows something and there's someone that needs that help and you can connect them, fucking do it.
I've been finding that so to be true on Substack in particular. As much as sometimes the whole numbers game gets frustrating, that's just true anyway for any kind of publishing.
Yeah.
It was true on my old blog. Like that's not specific to Substack. But I'm finding that to be true. People are just like finding me and finding me and finding me. And we're having all these conversations and everyone's just like, hey, look, like just do it. People want this. So
right.
Yes, you're not going to be J.K. Rowling.
We're all
but
constantly.
Thank God, because you're a better writer than her. But you know
and,
what I mean?
Like, and apparently a better fucking human being than that.
Yeah, well, obviously that.
Fucking turf
I'm not
bitch.
A homophobe and a fucking anti-Semite. But that's the point. It's like, yeah, okay, you're not published yet. You're not making all of your money, but you have so many followers that are ready for your work to drop.
Right.
And it's just that. It's like you're finding little pockets. There's this pocket of fiction writers on there that are like totally teaming up together and like sharing their work. There's that exact thing, what you just said, is exactly what's happening. People are commenting on it all the time. They're like, you have it. It's good. It's valuable. Put it out there. And there are so many people doing that. And it's phenomenal. And it's not one of the top. That's not one of the big five. So that was my main topic that I was thinking about today. It's just like, yeah, well, I'm frustrated because no agent is getting back to me. I've gotten a couple of pretty nice rejections, one of which was pretty personalized, which was great.
Mm.
And the other one...
You were going to tell me
about
that.
The other one... Yeah. Well, that was I told you about that other one a while ago, I think. It was like a few months ago. But I sent another handful out recently. And I got one back, and I think it doesn't really smell like it's personalized necessarily, maybe slightly, but it had a nice little list of like resources. Here's some more people you can send it to.
Oh, cool.
I'm getting so much traffic. I can't accept all the wonderful books. So, you know, so it's kind of a bugger off and die letter, but it was like really nice. And
No. That's
like,
not
oh,
a bugger off and
places.
Die letter. If they're giving you other places to go, they had to think about that. That's not just a knee-jerk thing. Like, oh, just...
I don't know. It really did seem like it was probably automated.
Maybe, but...
It didn't feel totally... it wasn't like when I got my book published and they were like, oh, well, I don't want it, but my friend so-and-so at such-and-such might. It wasn't like that. It was like, hey, there are too many good books for me to take. So here is a list of... And it was like, you know, like
right.
agent wish lists and stuff like that. But, you know, so it was like, it was nice. Better than ghosting, which is what most agents do.
No, when I got that rejection from, I don't know if I've said this out loud and I don't know if I want to say it. When I got that nice rejection from that one small press and she sent me to these other, you know, collections of small presses.
That's great.
Said, try these. They tend to do kind of what you're doing. And just the fact that that thought was put into that letter meant so much. Yes. It still does, right?
Oh, for sure.
Now, at the same time, you know, I'm a pretty well-researched guy. I was like, oh, cool. And then I went and I looked at the presses that were under those umbrella organizations she sent me to, and I was like, oh, yeah, I got them. I got that guy already. I got that right. But
oh,
still, it
bad.
Was like, it was like, no, what it told me was I'm on the right track. I'm looking in the right
yes.
places. And so now it's just a matter of finding that editor and that publisher that is going to take that risk.
It just takes one. That's all it takes. And if you quit doing it, like you were talking about before, if you just stop, then it's that one.
Yeah.
It just takes the one. As you know, you've been published before. It just took that one. It's just going to have to take another one. And it's harder now than it ever has been.
Right.
That was one of my major questions, especially because I wouldn't be able to show numbers to anybody and say I'm successful on Substack, but I am feeling really pretty successful on Substack.
Right.
I have a very engaged audience. The audience is small. I have like almost 200 subscribers and almost 400 followers who are only following me on the little social media part of it. Yay.
Yay.
Well, you're subscribed though, aren't you?
I'm not paying anything.
No. There's free. Most of my subscribers are free. There's subscribers who they get my stuff in their email. And then there's followers who only go on to notes and see me there, but they're still reading me for free. Like people are like, why do you even have a notes function? Why do you even have followers? People are thinking I'm like, no, you don't understand. People follow when they don't want more shit in their inbox, in their email, because they don't know you yet. Like people like you and Paul and like people I know are like, oh, sure, Jen can send me her crap and she can clutter up my inbox because I love her.
Right.
You know, but like someone who doesn't know me might be interested in what I write, but doesn't want my shit in their inbox. So they're just going to click follow. They're still reading my stuff. I was just having a conversation with somebody today and she's like, oh, yeah, no, I've read a lot of your vocab word pieces on Friday. I like them a lot. And she's not a subscriber. So like I'm getting lots of my stuff out there and read. It's like, and I know that self-publishing is a lot more legit than it used to be, way more legit than it used to be when I first started out. Yet is it legit enough for my own thoughts? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to self-publish, the operative word there is publish. And that means
exactly.
You have to act like a fucking goddamn publisher, which means you need to hire an editor, you need to hire a proofreader, you need to hire a book designer in some fashion, because you don't want your 15-year-old nephew drawing your cover, because it will look like a fucking cartoon.
Right.
Sorry.
No, all of that. No, I know. And I know people, I've been in the self-promotion business for a very long time, the theater side of things. So yeah. So yes, exactly. Also, like for me, I don't know if it's just my age or what, but I'm still just like, I published snippets of my memoir on my Substack, just a couple clips here and there. I don't want to publish the whole thing on there. And then lately I've been questioning as to why. I'm like, I don't know. Because I want it to be published. Why is that not published though? How is that not any more than, well, I mean, I could make, I want to make a physical book out of it for one thing. But aside from that, like, so it's just this conundrum. I'm still in this conundrum. I'm still going to send it to agents. I still want to get it published. But I don't know, like, Being a part of Substack for like a little over a year now has like been really interesting, because people are going pretty far. People have taken large followings that they used to have on other platforms, brought them here very successfully. People are getting found there, like discovered there, you know, like the whole Julie and Julia story, which is a total Cinderella story that like literally never happens, even though it did for her. That was from a blog, but you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing is happening all over the place. And I'm making good connections, but I don't know. At the same time, I'm like, this doesn't feel real.
Right.
Then again, I just got my new royalty statement for the second half of last year.
Yeah.
I made $1.12 off of my book sales, which on the one hand is laughable. On the other hand, I'm like, it's still
in print. You're doing a dollar better than I am.
Wow. It was off of two sales of two ebook versions of my book. That was what it was from.
My book sales are so bad on that one book. It's still in print. It's still out there.
Okay. Cool.
But I have not yet made back my advance.
Oh, and, yeah. My advance was small, so I did.
And because I have not made back my advance and it's been 15 years, I don't even get statements anymore.
You don't even get statements?
Nope.
Well, they should give you a statement to tell you how much is getting taken off.
Not according to the contract. It's been too long.
Oh, that's weird, because it's been longer than that for me, and I still get statements, even if it's not. It
depends on
out.
How your contract is going, and if you have made back your advance, if you've made back your advance and everything now is royalty, yes, you'll still get a statement.
But I got a statement even when hadn't paid it down yet. They still were just like, oh, here's.
But you were still still within that spot where it mattered, right? So my book was.
I guess it was within a few years. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I haven't looked at my contract in a long time.
We'll go take a look at my contract sometime. We'll find all the little caveats. But it's been 15 years since my book was published, and I have not earned back my advance. So essentially, even though Unbridled is not going to let the book go out of print, they're basically written off what wasn't earned back. And so I won't get a statement again until I earn money beyond the advance.
Have they actually written it off? Like, are they just not even counting it anymore?
No, they're still counting it. But there's nothing to report to me.
Well, yeah, here's three more copies that got sold. Here's how much we took off, right? I don't know. That just seems weird. But yeah, it's a contract thing, I suppose. I haven't looked at mine in forever. But it was delightful. I got my royalty statement today. I'm like, oh, yay. But I'm not going to be sent a check until I top, I think, $25 or something like that. Right now, I think I'm at like $12 and something cents. So that's the entire last year. So maybe in another couple of years, I'll get $25 in the mail. So all of that makes me think, I'm like, wow. Yeah, that was my grunt. That was my grunt of dissatisfaction.
You know, and the thing is, our new mutual friend Crystal is on spring break right now and probably reading my manuscript. Since we swapped things, I'm waiting to see some more of her work when she's ready to send it to me. But
awesome. Where does she live again?
Kansas City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What are you drinking today? Oh, I haven't talked about what you're reading, what you're writing.
I've talked about all the reading stuff, all the writing. I am drinking Ruta 22, a Malbec.
You're licking the outside of your bottle.
Well, it had a wet spot on it, so I just wanted to catch it.
Listeners, he hasn't dated anyone in a very long time. Now, whenever he sees a wet spot, he has to lick it. Someone come and help him. Good God. Okay.
Anyway.
What else? What am I reading? Oh, yeah. So there's a read-along on Substack. A bunch of us are rereading the Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
And it's being led by another professor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fun. It's a lot of fun. He's going to republish my lecturettes from that ancient DU class, too. So we're all going to share all of our thoughts about it. So it's been pretty fun.
I'm going to make a confession, and you're going to hate me for it.
Okay, that's fine.
I spend 40 hours a week staring at a computer reading shit on a computer.
Oh, yeah. And you don't want to stare at a computer anymore.
Right. So usually when I get home or if I'm looking at the phone, I feel guilty about this as hell. Is that I was like, do I have to read more things on a screen?
No, you shouldn't feel guilty. You've also told me this before. You should. Okay. I'm not going to hate you for that. That's totally valid. That is totally valid. That is a serious problem that most people have.
Yeah.
I'm even having it now too. I've had like two classes assigned to me from DU per quarter. These past couple of quarters, actually I have two classes coming up and then two classes after that. So yeah, no, I have to spend my literal entire day staring at screens between my own work and my work.
Right.
So yeah, that's totally valid. Well, this is why paper books are so great. This is why your collection is.
But I want you to know that
I
still clock all of the things that you post. I acknowledge them. They're there.
Oh,
I'm aware of them.
Yeah.
And I'm going to read the Wichita Brewing Company piece.
More about the place than it is about me. Sometimes I just get way too far in the personal essay weeds in those, which actually people tend to like. I've gotten comments from my readers that are like, I love it when you just go off into your own weird self. I'm like, okay, good. That's something that Herb Childress kept telling me too. He's like,
more of you.
Really?
Right.
That's not interesting. It's just me. He's like, no, more of it. More.
If you're writing a memoir, that's what people are there for.
Yeah.
Jen Zuko is you, not...
Yeah, I know. Between Herb and Paul and my readers now, I'm like, okay, finally I'm starting to be maybe a little bit convinced that people are interested in my actual life stories.
And I hope you told that to Crystal, because I think... Because one of the things that we bonded over was that we were both kind of there... You know, for AWP, she had not originally planned on going in person to anything, just doing virtual stuff.
Oh, uh-huh.
And we were both kind of there, and we talked about it. Both being there is kind of like...
Did you just poke each other, or like, you're a human?
We showed up here because we kind of needed to be revived. We needed something to reignite our inspiration.
Yeah, to be around human beings.
Not just around human beings, but to be around the human beings that do the thing we do, that have a passion for the thing that we do.
And paper books and...
Right.
Yeah.
I got a text from her shortly after the conference where she had said something about she'd, you know, finally sat down and felt motivated to write again. And I was like, go for it.
Excellent. Yes.
I too feel that same thing. I'm still kind of riding that wave, and because I'd rather, you know, dramatically told her when we met at the meetup, I'm here to say goodbye to a dream. Right.
Oh, God. Were you written by David Foster Wallace? Come on.
No, I was not.
This entire time, you've just been a character written by David Foster Wallace.
Listen, if I were a character in a David Foster Wallace novel, I would pull a David Foster Wallace and just end it all right now.
Okay.
I am not a fan. Let's just put it that way.
No, I'm not either. I'm joking. I know you can take it.
I'm reading a book right now for the fucking KNB, and I think the guy wanted to be David Foster Wallace, but he's like older than David Foster Wallace. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
A lot. Again, man babies. That's the good title for this episode. Again, comma, man babies.
Again, man baby?
Again, man babies. A surprising number of men want to be David Foster Wallace, and I'm like,
why?
Are men okay? Are straight men okay? Straight men are not.
Straight men are not okay.
No, not at all. I know they're not.
I know they're not. I'm a straight man.
I know several of them, and I love several of them, and they're not doing all right.
No, I'm doing okay.
I mean, they're okay, but they're not okay. The ones I love are okay, but they're not okay though.
But that's because we have embraced the full spectrum of our humanity, and we're not afraid of those parts of our humanity that other men use as a weapon to call us fags.
Well, and you're comfortable with a spectrum of masculinity, which is the reality of humans.
That is true.
In general.
Oh, you know what?
What?
Total non sequitur, way off base.
Chicken butt.
Chicken butt. I found out what was wrong with my body. So Paul got his positive health news, but I finally found out why I had this never-ending case of plantar fasciitis and couldn't run.
Yeah. Oh, you figured it out.
Yeah.
That's another
Went to go see the doctor.
Positive.
They took x-rays, said looks like there's nothing wrong with you. We're going to send you to physical therapy to work on it. Physical therapist lays me down on the table, you know, grabs a hold of my legs, whatever, goes, do you know your left leg's shorter than your right leg? I went, I've never been told that before.
Really?
She goes, yeah, we should probably work on that. Here, try this. Gave me a few things to do, whatever. And it turns out that somehow, a year ago, I had did something to my pelvis that caused the left side of it to go up higher than my right side. So every time I stepped with my left foot, I was basically stepping into a hole.
Yeah, right. So you're giving yourself a lot more pressure. Yeah.
And literally within 2 days of starting all the stretches and stuff to get my pelvis back level, the pain in my foot was gone.
Shut up. That's awesome.
Right.
So, and are your legs the same height, the same length now?
Yeah, my legs have always been the same damn length. It's just I had jacked up my pelvis. I had tilted my pelvis somehow. So yeah, I'm now having
to. Are you running again?
No, because I lost the fucking habit.
Oh, okay.
So I've got to rebuild the damn habit.
But at least you can now.
So now I've got all these stretches and things to do, you know, to keep the pelvis in the right place and strengthen.
Oh, that's awesome.
Rather than buying fucking kettlebells, what I did was I did like the Tim the Toolman Taylor version of kettlebells. I went to Lowe's, I bought a couple of buckets and some paving sand, and I've made my own like garage kettlebells with buckets so that I can do the farmer's carry.
That's so manly, I can't stand it.
Right?
I made my own kettlebells out of buckets
out of
sand.
Buckets and sand. And I just,
Jesus Christ.
And I gotta carry them around the backyard to make sure that, you know, all the, you know, the upper body strength and the core and the hips and that stuff and the stability is right.
Oh yeah.
Get back to running and improve my stamina, which will be helpful.
Yes.
But we have like a minute left. What are you working on? What are you writing besides the memoir? Are you writing anything new?
I write new stuff every week. New stuff's coming out every single week on my Substack.
I'm always hoping that you'll say, I started a novel, or I started a story, or I got some poems.
Well, there is one. Yeah, there's... I was given a very good idea, and that's to put together the concepts that I would use to teach in my class I used to teach called World of Visual and Performing Arts.
Oh, cool.
And the concept is that every art movement is a rebellion against an established art movement that came before and was the norm.
Yes. And
so in the class, I basically picked three time periods that I happen to know a lot about.
Right on.
And so I just taught the class based on that, just because I fucking could talk about it, right? So I talked about, what did I talk about? Oh yeah, Renaissance. I'm talking about visual and performing arts, two of them. But if I make this book proposal, I would want to talk about literary arts as well.
Right on.
And maybe music, but we'll see. So Renaissance Europe, late 1800s, so like Victorian in England or like Belle Epoque France, like that kind of era.
Right.
Victorian era. And so like from the late 1800s up until like World War One, basically, like that little window. And then I call it the early postmodern era. So like late 1960s through probably early 1980s, I would say. Mostly in America, but there's a lot of different movements happening there.
Yeah.
So like I basically I'm like, okay, so in the Renaissance, obviously the whole deal with the Renaissance is that a bunch of people were like, holy shit, this classical stuff is awesome. Let's do things like that. Let's talk about things like humanism and as above, so below, and structuring our society the way the cosmos are. And let's make the Bible into this really cool piece of English literature. Let's have Shakespeare do some shit, like, you know, that kind of thing. Humanism, the individual as being the ideal aesthetic, that kind of thing. And then that was rebelling against the earlier medieval periods, which was much more communal, very much more sort of herd mentality kind of stuff, at least in Europe it was. In other places in the world, it was a lot different. But, and then in the late 1800s into the early 1900s, in theater, the Moscow Art Theater came up with realism, like with Chekhov and with Stanislavski, and Meyerhold came soon after that. And they were like, we're sick of every play talking about kings and, you know, gods and larger than life people. We want to talk about regular assholes who just like walk around and speak the way normal people speak. And their sets are going to be like a living room and they're going to have problems like we all have. And it was considered so vulgar. At the same time, France was doing this thing where like, oh, we're so sick of salon painting. Salon painting is so boring. We're so bored with it. How about we don't finish our paintings? How about we give an impression of an emotion? Because guess what? We can just take a fucking picture nowadays. Now we have this thing called a camera where you could just sit there and it takes 5 minutes for us to get your exact image onto a plate. Now, my job as a painter is not to paint you as you are, because I can do that with a machine. Now my job as a painter is to give an impression of you.
I still have not sent you a copy of On Photography, have I?
Oh yeah, no. The A Ways of Seeing book was perfect. In fact, when you gave it to me, I started reading it.
Yeah.
I got home and it was literally a section of that book was assigned in my class that I was teaching at that time. I was like, okay. Amazing.
But I need to get you that Sontag book.
But and then the postmodernists started to deconstruct everything. And then they've been deconstructing shit ever since pop art happened and constructivist stuff happened in the Oulipo and the Dadaists and all that kind of stuff. So they start deconstructing. And then Paul and I actually having this conversation the other day. We're like, well, you can deconstruct and then there's no structure. So then what's left? So what can you do nowadays? Like everything is possible. I was writing about this the other day on my Substack. It's like, I wear 90s fashions all the time. It's not considered old fashioned. I could even wear like a Victorian outfit and I'd go out and I'd look kind of neat and fancy, but people wouldn't think I was from Mars. They'd be like, oh, neat, cool. So like, what is there left? Like, what do we have left to rebel against? Everything goes right now because we've done it all. So like, does AI have something to do with
what we're rebelling against? We rebel against now? The algorithm.
Yeah.
We reconnect our humanity. This is where, Team Human and Douglas Rushkoff comes in, is that we rebel against the algorithm. We rebel against the machine that we've built that is now trying to control us by reconnecting to our humanity, to each other, to the weird, awkward, strange connection that you get by actually sitting with another human being. And Right,
like you did at AWP, and we're talking about the artisanal writing being very—it's going to be very valuable very soon.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, that is the thing that is on the, like if you have a four burner stove, right? You got the thing that you're constantly cooking. That's like already that's still simmering. That's my Substack. But then this is like on the other front burner. It's not on the back burner, but it's like I gotta combine some ingredients and and get that one going. So, but it's another nonfiction idea as well, which means I'm going to have to apply in a lot of different ways too. So anyway, so that is the next, probably the next writing project. And for that one, what I might do is actually start that on Substack. I have heard of people doing this where they get it done by themselves that way. And then a publisher goes, oh, cool. Look at how many followers you have. This looks good. I've read three different stories from three different authors that have gone either from a blog or from their, especially more from Substack, because that seems to be a lot more legit.
Right. And then you take all the pieces from Substack, you flesh it out a bit more, you refine it, you revise it, you do whatever, and you make it, oh, a new book, and
knit blah, blah, blah. The chapters together. Yeah. Once I have someone who's like, hey, you know what? That's a good thing. Let's make it into a thing. No, you can turn pages
that,
up.
It's that thing. It's that angle that makes me think about my fucking stupid 20-year-old essay I've been working on.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my so-called manifesto, which is not really a manifesto anymore.
It would be perfect as a serial on Substack.
Right.
It would be perfect. People would be very interested. They would get soups engaged in it, I'm sure.
Probably get angry at me.
Well, I mean, sure. Great. Awesome.
Which is fine, but I don't need to be any more of a pariah than I already am.
No, I'd actually doubt it. I bet you'd find a lot of people who would be really interested in engaging with you with it. Just judging from the people that I'm like engaging with right now.
I went out and had drinks with my old boss from work, the one work friend that I've ever made in the however many years I've been out there at the
The
Ferengi. And without being prompted, without being talking about it, she started talking to me about how everything that's getting published now seems badly edited, poorly thought out. And it's like, I said, tell me more. I just encourage. And basically she kind of ended up where, and I didn't direct or push her to that type of conclusion. Coax her out of it. It's like, what she is seeing, this person who is an avid reader and not a writer in any way, is that all the stories that are getting published by the big five presses are turning out, no matter who the writer is, no matter how the publisher's badge re-engineer the book, they all read the same way.
Yeah.
They all feel like it's just the same story again and again and again and again.
It's almost automated.
And when it does deviate from that story that's been told again and again and again, it's not very well edited and poorly thought out. Mm. And right. It's like the stuff
no one's paid attention to it.
And it's like, it's almost like it's this thing like, oh, there's the algorithm we're a thing, but here's us doing something new. And it's actually not new and not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I've been working on is trying to finish up that 20-year-old fucking essay in some way, right, to wrap it up. Because I realized that I could spend the rest of my life constantly pulling in new texts and people that are...
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Right, and refining my idea. And I just need to fucking put a fucking endpoint on it and go, here's my conclusion right now, and shove it out in the world.
Maybe you should serialize it and then... end it after you serialize, you know what I mean? Like put out the first part for next part, next part, next part. By the time you're at the end, write the end. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because you'll get people talking at, like probably talking about, I can't imagine you wouldn't get people like engaged with it and talking about it.
One would hope, but I don't know. And then I finally figured out how to solve the problem that I was having with my novel, Crazy Unconscious Days.
Oh, yes.
So I'm back to that.
Oh, great.
It's moving slowly, but it's because I'm doing something that I've never quite done before. And I'm doing some stuff that... I am forcing myself to... have a hallucinogenic trip without taking hallucinogens.
Ah, okay, cool.
Which is very fucking challenging. And I wish someone would give me some hallucinogens.
Well,
but I live in Kansas. Fuckers. Yeah. Where, sure, you can get an abortion, but pot's still illegal.
I wonder if, like, there's got to be someone doing microdosing practices there. Has to be.
All I know is there's ways to get it. But everybody, I was talking to a new friend of mine the other day just about this fact, is that, you know, I'm open to drugs, but there's something about me. And she immediately goes, well, it's the way you speak. There's a certain tone and inflection to your diction that makes people think that you're uptight or something.
Oh, that you might be a narc.
Right.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right. The curses of having natural diction. Slurring your words. And I don't know.
Are you going to talk to us about your diction again online?
I'm going to talk to you about my diction.
You don't need to hear all about your diction.
All about my diction. But we're past our time. You said you had a hard stop in an hour.
I do have
so
a hard
let's,
stop.
So let's say goodbye.
Okay.
Hard stop. You said hard. Fucking goddamn it. Anyway, so we'll be back at this next month. Thanks for letting us take a month off. And I completely forgot to do the whole, like, here's a 1 minute. We're going to take March off. Fuck it. We took March off. People are just going to have to suffer with
Who
it.
Who noticed? Tell us if you noticed in any comments.
Apparently nobody
that you find
noticed.
Us on. Nobody gives a shit.
Nobody gives a shit. Anyway, so say goodbye.
Goodbye.